Time to find out what's happening in the world of technology now and how it affects thee and me. Leading us through it, as usual, is Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective. Don't forget that you can subscribe to his podcasts for free on gadgetdetective.com or on Alexa, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, etc. How's your week been, Fevzi?
It's been rather good, all things considered. On a micro level, a bit sad looking at the news, but it's strange, isn't it? That's a good question. How's your week been? Because I almost feel guilty about saying I've had a reasonably good week.
I know exactly what you mean. Yes,
because it's almost like one is blocking out the much bigger picture, and that gives me a sense of sadness.
I was out with friends last night, and we were saying we're all kind of children of the 60s or 70s, and we're saying that the difference is terrible things have always happened, but we used to hear about them for 10 minutes on a news bulletin on the telly once a night, and the rest of the time got on with our own lives. And looking back, we actually felt a bit ashamed, really, that we didn't, you know, realise how awful. Perhaps we did realise, but we didn't, you know what I mean? Now it's absolutely everywhere. And you can't say it's wrong that we know everything that's going on in the world, but it does make you feel like you've just described. Unanswerable, isn't it, really, I suppose?
Yeah, and there's two sides to that coin. So one is we know everything and we live it, and it's almost visceral in a way that wasn't, and the immediacy is here now. The other thing is that the technology gives us ways to actually influence things beyond just having a vote once a year. For example, I noticed that crowdfunding pages have been set up to actually evacuate Ukrainian citizens into Poland. Mm-hmm. And this money by citizens, I'm not advocating people do this, but some people are choosing to crowdfund. Crowdfunding is where you get a website for a cause. Often people going on things like sponsored runs and things trying to raise money for a charity, but it can be for a specific cause. So what they've done is they've set up crowdfunding web pages where you can go as a citizen and just give a certain amount of money online. And it goes, in this case, towards evacuating children into Poland. And it pays for buses to bus people out. So there are also ways in which we can actually do things, which is beyond just, protesting and speaking to our MPs and so forth. Yeah. And we should do those things as well.
We should do those things as well. But then we think, I'm not doing enough. Look, I'll do that in a bit. Oh, I haven't done it. I'm sure I should do more. Again, even that is I know that's, lucky us to have that problem and that dilemma, but it does make life a bit harder, no question about it.
Well, it's good, but I don't. On the other hand, I don't think we should feel so comfortable these days. Actually, I actually think that a bit of discomfort can be a good thing, frankly.
Oh, discuss. No, let's not. Let's discuss instead. Well, it's a related matter anyway. The online safety bill, which has been a long time coming. I mean, we were hearing about this from the government in, about 2019? Here we are, 20.
Yeah, it was 22. Theresa May's government. Yeah, it was the online harms bill at the time. Surprisingly, the BBC is still referring to it as the online harms bill today, which it hasn't been for some time. Yeah, right. It's the online safety bill. They changed the sort of focus somewhat. But it was first introduced as under Theresa May in April 2019. So that's 3 years. It had been debated for about a year before that. So we're 4 years in, and this is the second go at it, as it were. So the idea behind it is to make us all safer online, both adults and children. And, that's like something that everyone would be in favour of.
A good aid. Yes, you can't argue with that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I really despair at this bill. It is so 4 years in, it seems to me so ill-conceived. So it's designed to deal with things like cyberbullying, pornography, encouraging suicide. I think they've just put cyber flashing in there as well, which is, the sending of indecent photographs that are not wanted. Right. Ostensibly all good things, but it's very interesting, that they've taken all this time. They haven't properly defined the harms. And if you can't define things properly, you can't expect third parties, which is what this bill does, you can't expect them to sift for them, to filter them out. So there is that, and then they are very difficult to prove. So people think it's going to put an end to misinformation. It probably won't, because the offence is knowingly distributing seriously harmful misinformation. You have to prove, you know, what they call guilty mind, mens rea, that someone has to knowingly do that. Can an online company do that easily? Cyber flashing is the sending of unwanted naked images. Deliberately sending flashing images to those with epilepsy. So again, all of this requires either being able to prove what is in the mind of the person, but because someone can post misinformation and completely believe it, at which point it's not an offence. So yeah, we're putting this in the hands of companies like Facebook and saying, right, go filter this. So first of all, poorly defined. Secondly, very difficult to prove. Thirdly, technology doesn't yet exist to proactively remove this stuff without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And what I mean by that, the baby being free speech. And there is in this bill, there is for the first time the requirement on companies to actively monitor the content. And do something about it against some sort of vague set of rules. And the problem with that is, for example, this would not have been allowed, this bill would not have been allowed had we been members of the European Union. So this is a post-Brexit bill. And interesting enough, if you read the wording in the bill, it does talk about taking back control and things like this. And I don't wish to be in any sense party political about this, but it is... Before I started reading the detail, I was describing it as a curate's egg, well-intentioned. I'm now not even sure of that. I now wonder whether it is a not very covert attempt to control. Because this is, I suppose this is the equivalent of saying, in order to keep our children safe, the Royal Mail has to open and read every letter before delivering it. And therein lies the problem with this, and it goes about it the wrong way, because you have to say one of the main reasons why there are so many instances of these abuses online, one of the reasons why there is so much misinformation is because the platforms Facebook and Twitter and others positively encourage you to share stories and content and text and pictures, because the more it's the way their business models are set up. They make money. The more time you spend online, the more they learn about you, the more they can target advertising towards you and at you. And therefore, the answer to this, the biggest part of the answer, is to remove to make sure that the business models are changed, to outlaw the business models that make services, in quotes, free, in exchange for taking personal data from us. So that's what's driving it. This is a bit like, at the moment, there is an epidemic of fly tipping across this country. And, you know, you can go after individual cases of fly tippers, which is what this bill, in analogy, attempts to do. It goes after individual breaches of the law. But it doesn't, with fly tipping, you have to look at, oh, well, all the local authorities have... stopped their services to pick up the stuff, so that people are now fly tipping it instead of having it collected free at a much cheaper cost to the taxpayer. And in the same way, if we could change the dynamic of the business model that encourages this behaviour, I'm not saying there wouldn't be breaches of the law, but those breaches would be far more deliberate and egregious. For example, the whistleblower last year who presented evidence to British Parliament and to Congress in America, she... evidenced a meeting in Facebook where they were discussing whether people should be allowed to share content that they hadn't even read themselves, because Facebook can tell if you've looked at a document or a picture before sharing it on. And of course, this idea of sharing things without even reading is the most egregious form of this. But they took the decision to allow it at that time because it would make them more money, even though that was an irresponsible thing to do. And I don't just single out Facebook in this. No. So this bill is a disaster. It's poorly conceived, poorly put together.
Yeah, but just one question then before we wrap this and move on. And I know I've asked you this before, but given that whether they're acting maliciously or in a nice way, they're getting it so wrong because they don't really understand it. Why is it that you or someone like you isn't tech czar, and there aren't, the best world in the world, the average politician or civil servant is not going to understand the implications of all this. I wouldn't. in the way that you do. Why aren't people like you right at the heart of these things to at least give things a chance of flying? What's going wrong?
Well, look, you're flattering. There'd be people far, far better than me to advise the government. But the point being, government doesn't always want certain advice. It is inconvenient. For example, they recently disbanded SAGE. It is inconvenient. When the government wants to take things in a direction which is not backed by, in the case of COVID, the science, or in this case, their particular agenda, you know, what advisors are sometimes, you know, an inconvenience. There is that. But there is just, it's also a generational thing. And it's not that I'm a young man, but there are people who are legislating for us who really don't understand and probably would struggle to understand advice unless the advisors are very skilled delivering it. I don't really know the answer to that, but I just think that it's better to look for the underlying causes of particular crimes, which is what we're talking about, and deal with those. So, for example, as I've said, change the business models of the companies. Do what Finland is doing, and educate people in critical thinking. So that you don't tell them what to think, you don't tell them what to believe or share, you just give them the tools to maybe just analyse what they're being fed and decide for themselves whether it's likely to be true or not.
Back to Fevzi Turkout, the gadget detective, and if there's two things we've learned about Fevzi over the weeks and months that we've enjoyed him, it's that he is obsessed with well-being and coffee temperature, and we're back on the well-being today with a smartwatch.
Yeah, don't do as I do as I say, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, this I was thinking of in terms of a Mother's Day gift, because I think we're 8 days out from Mother's Day. It's a time to be thinking of this, otherwise it's a bunch of flowers from the petrol station.
Yeah.
Which is going to be much cheaper than a litre of petrol, it seems. So, this is a smartwatch, a health monitoring watch from Withings. We've talked about Withings before. They're a French company. It's called the Scan Watch. The reason I've chosen this one today, and you know, I have often in the past mocked people who've chosen things because of their colour. Right? So, you know, there's a markedly better iPhone, but that one's in this colour, so I'll have that. And that has caused some derision in Turkalp Towers. However, this particular Scan Watch, so this watch exists in two sizes. It's a round, conventional-looking watch with hands, and it's either in 38 or 42 millimetres. I know you said to me in the past, that doesn't sound like a very big difference. Actually, it's surprisingly big. It's very noticeable. Okay. And this, both the size and the choice of colours seems to be more directed towards women, although I hesitate to say that, because actually one of these I really like and have been wearing for the last week or so. So this one is in two colours, but the hands and the bezels are in rose gold in each case, and I just really love them. They call it rose gold. I would say it's more like a copper colour. So you can either have one with a white face or a blue face. I particularly like the blue one. But aesthetics aside, and I do think it makes a very good gift for someone who's not particularly techie. And the reason I say that is what's called a hybrid smartwatch. It has all the smarts of it, an Apple Watch, or many of them, but it looks like a conventional watch. It has hands, it's a round face, it's quite svelte, and it doesn't, you know, shout at you as being sort of geeky.
Yeah.
And yet it's got that small circular screen on it, this very crisp, what they call an OLED screen, which just means a very crisp screen. And when it pairs with your smartphone, then you get all that functionality out of it. So what makes it a smartwatch? It does an ECG on you, a one-lead ECG, and that detects a form of arrhythmia, a heart disturbance called atrial fibrillation. You get abnormal heart rhythm sometimes at night when you don't know it's happening. Important to know, people with atrial fibrillation have got 6 times the higher risk of stroke, for example. But if they know they have it, they can make lifestyle changes, and also there is medication, and therefore it is a good thing. You don't have to be obsessed by it. It can just be a feature on your watch that you use, you know, just from time to time. Or if you feel a bit of a flutter, you know, because it can just feel like palpitations and you can think nothing of it. And the problem with diagnosing AF or atrial fibrillation is that, you know, you go to your doctor and say, I think there's something not quite right. So they give you a one-day monitor or a 3-day monitor or a 7-day monitor. And when people first get AF, they might only get an attack once every month or 2 months. It's very unlikely that you'll get the attack whilst you're wearing the monitor, whereas if you have it on your wrist and you feel a little wobble in your chest, you can just put your finger on it and off you go. So that's the ECG part of it. It also does oxygen readings, what they call SpO2 readings. You just it can tell you how much, what percentage of oxygen is in your blood. Again, that's an indication of illness. If it drops down into the low 90s, for example, that's not great. You may wish to get checked out. It looks at your heart rate generally. Does it go too high or too low at any period of time, particularly if it's not associated with exercise? If your heart rate goes too low, that's dangerous. People faint, break limbs and so forth. Breathing disturbances detection. Now, they've put that in an interesting way. That's what most people would know as sleep apnea, where people stop breathing for short periods of time at night, often repeatedly through the night, and are never aware of it because they're sleeping and they're on their own and no one has noticed it. And again, it's linked with heart disease. Often people who have AF also have sleep apnea and vice versa. And also associated with, in addition, heart disease, things like dementia. So if your sleep quality is not what it should be, if you're waking up or nearly waking up because you're stopping breathing, then this can detect it at night. Also 24-hour activity tracking. So it gives you that full gamut. It's got a really good app called the HealthMate app, which is one of the better of its ilk. And yet all the smarts are on there, so you don't, the watch remains elegant. This price, shade under £280. Today I saw it for the cheapest I've seen it, I think ever, is £229, which whilst is still not cheap, I would say is about half the price of an Apple Watch.
Right. Is that place that makes you think of big women? There we saw that for £229.
You mean the tall ones?
The tall women with the river.
Not the bariatric kind. No. Yes.
Obviously.
The ones that remind me of South American rivers. That's right. Four and a half stars out of five. Really lovely. And I don't know if you can see the pictures that I sent through, but the one with the blue face and the copper.
Lovely.
Copper. I love it, and I'm not really into aesthetics. If you see me walking around, you'll know that. But this one particularly spoke to me, and I've worn it, even though it's designated as a ladies' watch. It's not.
Oh, it's such a modern guy. This is fantastic.
Well, my wrists are quite thin anyway.
Mine are as well. Just when I thought we couldn't have any more in common or get on any better, we've both got thin wrists. From your thin-wristed male team, that was the Gadget Detective spot for this week. Follow Fevzi on his website, gadgetdetective.com. We'll do it in 7 days. Thank you so much.
Cheers.